Like, you know those little memes on Instagram where it goes, where it says, your starting point is here and your big dream is over here and you've got this perfect straight arrow and that's how you get there. But in reality, it's this great big squiggly line that goes all over the place and it's up and down. And that's like generally how it's always going to be. And I don't mean that in any sort of a negative, oh, it'll always be hard, it'll always be difficult. Things are only as difficult as you make them.
My name is Esprit Devorah, host of the Women in Tech Show. The show means a lot to me. The reason why I wanted to create the Women in Tech Show is I wanted to create a positive piece of content, something where people can listen and say, if she can do it, so can I. I call it actionable empowerment. Every single episode, you'll hear the story of a fantastic woman in tech, from engineers to founders to investors to journalists to designers, all sorts of different females in tech who have thrived. I want to share their stories with you so that you can know what resources, mentors, and life situations they accessed in order to get to where they are today. Enjoy. I am thrilled to have Claire in from Ireland here at the studio in Santa Monica, California on the Women in Tech podcast. She is an incredible tech influencer over in Ireland, making things happen globally now. What I love is that she's just a go get it done girl, and she just like figures it out and she's like, how am I going to grow this company? And for her, it's all starting with a wireframe and a health app. So I welcome to you, Claire.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So go ahead and introduce yourself, your company, your role.
So I'm Claire Heaslip. As you mentioned, I've come all the way from Ireland. And all things healthy. It started, I suppose, nearly 2 years ago when I started my first online business, which is kind of a typical kind of online retailer for women's fitness wear in Ireland, because it was really difficult to get decent stuff back home. And yeah, it started there and it kind of grew quite quickly. So the original business is pretty much on ice, and the rest of it, that's where my focus went, really.
And where in Ireland are you from?
So I'm actually from Wicklow, which is on the East Coast, and I'm based out of Dublin.
How is the startup community?
It's there. Literally phenomenal. I mean, if you check out like the Startup Digest, which is like that global calendar where you can check into any city and see what's going on, there's 3, 4, 5 things every evening going on in Dublin. And then, you know, and Dublin isn't a huge city. It's a great town. I love it.
I love Dublin too. I've been there.
But it's a small city centre, and it's a really kind of sprawling suburbia. There's probably about 1.2 million people that live in Dublin, but it's phenomenal. Like, it has this amazing, amazing tech startup community. But I think it's something that really, it started a very long time ago. It hasn't just kind of come about in the last kind of 5-10 years. It's been something that started like significantly a long time ago, you know, when Ireland joined the EU, and there were all of these grants coming out for new businesses and what goes on. So there was, from early days, there was this innovation culture going on there before innovation was ever named.
I mean, one thing is, so the Web Summit started, I believe, in 2013.
Yeah.
Is that right? 2013?
I don't actually know myself. It's not running that long.
Yeah. And do you feel, and the government helped the Web Summit a lot, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
So do you think the Web Summit is this huge tech conference that, like, they get all these American speakers, this really high profile speakers from, you know, even people like Tony Hawk have flown to speak at the Web Summit in Dublin. Do you think the Web Summit, and now they have like a Web Summit in Vegas and a Web Summit in New Orleans, and just everywhere. Do you think that helped accelerate the startup culture in Ireland?
I mean, it probably, like, sure, it helped, but I don't know if it's entirely down to it. There was a lot of, you know, it was a bit like a perfect storm. There's a lot that goes into it. It's not that one thing triggered it. Okay, we had like that god-awful like recession, and we're still recovering from it. So there was a lot of, say, incentives and programs that were being devised by the government to, you know, get people, if you have an idea, there was support there for businesses or anybody who wanted to start a business. And it certainly helped, but I wouldn't put it down to the fact that it, you know, we had this great culture because of it. You know, it was already there. And like I said, the whole Irish tech scene, it's been on the go there for a very long time. Like, you have, everybody is in Ireland. Everybody is based, like, their European HQ is in Ireland.
And so tell me more about your company.
Yeah, so All Things Healthy, like, we are really, really early, early, early stage. But like, as you said, I don't even have a logo, but I don't care. Like, that's just like detail. And I don't kind of care to sweat the detail. I'm a kind of get shit done kind of person. I was sitting with a good friend of mine who's a programmer, a really, like, really, really good advanced programmer. We were sitting in Swipe Conference, which was, you know, another how to be really awesome on social media type thing. And we're going, oh God, not another one. And I'm sitting there and I'm kind of thinking to myself, okay, I was selling some stuff on Amazon, one of the labels that I have, because they're in the Czech Republic and you can't. Amazon don't support the country to sell on it. So I kind of thought, okay, fine, I'll, you know, with their permission, I was selling on there, and I'm kind of sitting there going, no, it doesn't work. It's not moving fast enough. It's, people don't go there to buy fitness wear. And my daily Etsy email popped in and I just thought, oh, I love Etsy. Love it, that little 5 minute, hang on everybody, I'm taking a break. I'm having a look at all the lovely things that Etsy wants me to buy. And I just thought, I had this kind of little moment where I thought, oh God, wouldn't it be amazing if there was this like version of Etsy that was for all of like the health and fitness guys and all of these amazing small to medium sized companies that are out there. Because they're like, when I started with Grace and Able, looking for labels and brands that I wanted to stock, like it really is an eye opener to how many people are out there. And usually it's, you know, I kind of felt like these are amazing people. You know, it's not just about the stuff that they've made and that they're selling. They all have these amazing stories and they're really into what it is that they're doing. And most of them are sort of sitting there going, I can't get really decent rowing clothes, or I can't get these specific type of stuff, so I'm going to make it. I just kind of felt like there is that community out there, and it's similar to those, you know, craft makers and that cottage industry that they've captured on Etsy. And so I'm sitting there and this, like, literally it's like a lightning bolt hit me, and my friend is beside me, and I sent him a text message and I'm going, oh, I'm going to build the Etsy for health and fitness. And he was like, oh my God, that's amazing, you know. So that's kind of where the seed started, and that's what it is in essence. But since then, you know, I kind of had to sort of take a step back from that, like, amazing, oh my God, I'm so in love with this new idea moment, and kind of take the time to actually really research the industry from everything from, like, you know, crunch the numbers from an accounting point of view. Like, I'm ACCA. I worked in Citibank and international finance for like the best part of 10 years. So it was like, you know, put the business, you know, put your big girl business pants on and do that stuff and make sure that this is absolutely, like, is it big enough to actually support that kind of a size of a platform?
And why do you think it is big enough? Like, what kind of products would you sell? Or it wouldn't be you selling, it'd be different independent people,
like,
selling
literally
it.
Everything. And that's kind of where, like, the all things healthy comes in.
Yeah.
That it's literally about, it doesn't matter if you're like a 22-year-old dude who goes to Gold's Gym down at Venice Beach, or if, you know, you're a 35-year-old skier in France, or if you're into triathlons or, like, whatever, like, all of the stuff is there, it's out there. So it should really be, because, like, there's no place, one place that you can go online to get all of this. I just kind of thought, okay, this makes sense. You know, it's definitely big enough. Like, it's ridiculously huge. The numbers are mind-blowing sometimes.
And where are you in the process right now?
I have wireframes.
What did you use to create the wireframes?
Oh, I drew them out, and then I have I literally sketched them out on graph paper with colored pencils. And I have a friend who actually, he's a designer, and he's very kindly sort of done basic mock-ups for me, and, you know, stuck in like pictures and whatever. So it's, for me, that's like, when you have those visuals, it's a much easier conversation when you're out talking to people, so you get that visual impact.
A great wireframing tool, there's two of them. I'm spacing on the second one right now.
There's one, Balsamic.
And there's what's the other one? I love it too. Envision app and Balsamic are great wireframing tools.
I sort of leave stuff like that to people who really know what they're doing. Like, I could absolutely learn how to do stuff like that. And I've used Balsamic before, but it's kind of one of those tools that it would probably take me like a couple of days to really crack.
Right.
So that comes back to the whole, like, let's just get some stuff done. So if I can, like, if I know somebody who, you know, for a coffee, or, you know, I don't know, bake them like an apple pie or something, you know, and they'll do them for me, then great. That's going, like, they can knock them out in 2 hours, where it might take me 3 or 4 days. So, you know, for me, that's kind of like, it comes back to like lean principles, you know.
Totally.
Like, you know.
When did you become exposed to the tech world?
I went to university in England, and then I stayed there for 9 years. And then I went home. I moved back to Ireland in 2008 as quite literally the sky was falling on everybody in the financial crisis. And like, ridiculously, I actually got a job in banking.
See, there's always a possibility.
Like, I kid you not, I arrived home on the 1st of May 2008 in Citibank in Dublin. And Citibank don't really have any retail banking in Europe.
Right.
So it was like an international funds in Dublin. And I was on the sales and relationship management team, and all my clients were banks and insurance companies and investment managers. And basically, so for the next 2 years, it was a little bit of a shitstorm.
Yeah.
You know, and this is my first time ever working in banking. And my boss would kind of look at me, and like, because there were days when we were sitting there at 10 o'clock at night, and he's like, you've no idea, this has never happened before.
Right.
And I'm like, but sure, it's grand, isn't it? You know, it was the typical Irish answer, you know, but like, look, sure, we'll get through it. It'll be fine. You know, we'll just batten the hatches and carry on. But in Citibank, they have this great culture of, you know, if you want to get involved in something, just put your hand up. Because they'd often look at their own products and say, well, how is it that going to evolve, and how can we streamline things, and how can we make this easier and quicker and faster, and what can we automate? And so they were often doing these kind of innovative lean sort of process,
right.
Anyway, so then they just kind of said, okay, well, let's formalize this and let's see what else we can do, because ultimately it comes down to, you know, bottom line and top line, how much money are we saving and how much more can we make, you know, which, so
yeah, yeah,
it
yeah.
was yeah so it was there, and that was probably like really my first exposure to it.
And like through this, it seems like a totally different world than the world you're in
completely.
Now, so how do you get from there to here?
So it's not the first time that I've had a jump like that. Like, I started out life as a dancer. My undergraduate degree is dance.
Right.
When I moved to England, I did my degree in dance, moved to London, had a blast. I had a ballet school there. I ran summer camps for kids. I worked, and that was part-time while I was trying to kind of grow it. And I suppose at the time I had this idea that it would be full-time. But like, when you start on a journey, you're doing something, then you like living it is very different to what you think it will be, and I found it a very kind of I suppose a bit lonely, because it was just me and the kids all day long, and so I knew I wanted more than that.
Yeah.
So I would work in I worked in like a really amazing music venue and did other stuff as well.
Right.
So when I was going home in 2008, I kind of thought, I'm not starting another dance school. Like, it's, you know, I kind of thought, I've had enough of that. And sort of, you know, and also because that really is, it's like one of my first true loves.
Right.
And it became something for everybody else. And I wanted it back for me. I wanted it to be my interest and my hobby. And everybody else can just, you know, go somewhere else for it. So, so I kind of thought, okay, well, I'm going to go and get a big girl's grown-up job now.
Right.
And I wanted to get into accounting. So I was on a number of, like, job interviews for some really big companies back home. And, yeah, I ended up in Citibank.
Where do you go? Where do you go today? Like, how do you...
So today... coffee, and then
today, like, how do you go from wireframe to next step? I mean, you've already had the blessing of having an angel investor interested, like,
yeah.
How did you even attract that person?
I'm sort of like, I'm really into that whole, you know, universal law of attraction, like, if you ask, you will get it,
right?
And it's about allowing that to come to you, and it's about, you know, I think it's also about accepting that, you know, even though as an individual and as a founder, I'm the one to make this happen, you don't do it by yourself. And it's acknowledging that you're not the person who is the expert in everything. You're almost like the curator of the most amazing team in the world, and you just have to get out there and find them.
But how will you find them, and who will you look for first?
Like, it's kind of like why I'm here. It's like, you just bang on doors and you show up at networking events. Like, I met that angel investor by going to there's a thing in Dublin, it's the first Friday, so if anyone's ever in Dublin, on the first Friday of the month in the morning, there's like a breakfast session in the Dublin Docklands that's run by a lady called Niamh, I think her last name is Shorthall, and it's specifically for tech industry and tech startups. And on the same day, you can turn up, and probably mostly the same crowd who go to the Dublin Silicone Drinkabout, which is run by an amazing guy called Gene Murphy. And I was at the Silicone Drinkabout, and it's Friday night, everyone's finished work, it's literally just a few beers and bits of finger food and chatting and whatever the hell else. And I met a girl who works for like this angel investor on his marketing team, and he really specializes in really early stage startups where it's just that one person or one or two people who have a really sound business idea. And unless you have the funds for them, you know, where, how are you going to build it?
Right.
You know, so they actually provide the support. So instead of actually kind of writing me a check, the idea would be that they would actually, his team would build it for me.
Oh, that's
so
amazing.
So they actually have, you know, the programmers and, you know, all of the designers, and they then have the support team who would actually function as your back office. You know, it's that whole thing of, you know, put it out there. This is what I want. Send them to me.
What would you say your calling is?
My calling? Yeah, no, I think actually this is it. I think this is actually the road I've been on for a very long time. But it's sort of, I remember somebody kind of looking at my CV one time and thinking, God, you've been out, like, you've been chop and change a little bit, don't you? Whereas I kind of see I did the dance thing, and it's the whole creative thing. And like being creative, it's actually a lot to do with problem solving. And so you have that element, and that's obviously always transferable. And then, you know, working in finance and everything, and that's always transferable, and how to run a business, because, you know, the ethos there was always, if this is your business, what would you do?
Right.
And, you know, then when you come out into tech land, you know, when there's a big culture of people who, oh my God, I've got this amazing idea, and, you know, we're all human. You fall in love with your own stuff
right.
so much, but it's being able to kind of detach yourself. And I suppose my calling is really, this is it. This is absolutely it.
And how would you say you overcome challenges?
I think the biggest challenge when something really raises its ugly head is kind of keeping it together yourself. Because unless you have a clear mind and you can actually focus on what the genuine problem is and not get kind of caught up in the, oh my God, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Do you know, that's when it can really be an issue. Whereas if it's a case of, okay, something has happened. Okay, that's fine. It's just a little roadblock. And if all you see it as is this one little thing, then, you know, you circumnavigate it. And I think also that's kind of where, like, what my experience at Citibank came into play is that, you know, there's always something. Things are never that simple. Like, you know, those little memes on Instagram where it says, your starting point is here and your big dream is over here and you've got this perfect straight arrow and that's how you get there. But in reality, it's this great big squiggly line that goes all over the place and it's up and down. And that's, like, generally how it's always going to be. And I don't mean that in any sort of a negative, oh, it'll always be hard, it'll always be difficult. Things are only as difficult as you make them.
Right.
And if you make something small into a great big hoo-ha, then, you know, that's what it becomes.
Yeah. What do you say is the best lesson you've learned about pursuing your dream?
Don't listen to other people. And I mean, take advice from the right people.
Right.
But, like, literally don't, like, you know, when people start to kind of give their opinions.
Right.
I've recently come to the opinion that people are not entitled to an opinion about what it is that you're doing.
Right.
They're not, and people will always say, I'm entitled to my opinion. You're not. You're not entitled to a single opinion about anything that has absolutely nothing to do with you. And if I choose to go in a particular path, in a particular direction, or like anything, like, you're not entitled to an opinion on what I'm wearing. You're not entitled to an opinion on the fact that I quit my job. You're not entitled to an opinion on anything.
Yeah.
Unless it affects you. And if it doesn't affect you, like, shut up.
I think that everybody has an opinion.
Yeah.
And it's okay to have an opinion, but, like, it's up to us as independent people to kind of take in what we'd like to take in.
Yeah. And I think
having an opinion is just a natural human reaction.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You can't stop people from having an opinion, but it's the,
but to tell
it's
you
the
what,
judgmental.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I actually first quit my job, and, like, people would sort of sit back and you could see the, like, because it's not something that most people would do. I had a great job, and, like, I won't lie, there were a couple of times in the first couple of months where I was sitting there going, oh my God, I had a pension, I had everything, I had bonuses every year,
yeah.
This is great, like, what were you thinking? Because, you know, you're having a bad day. And then when you kind of put yourself back in that frame of mind of why you did it, like, it's okay, it'll all be fine. But, like, when it comes to people's opinions, you know, I had really close family members take me aside and they were being very genuinely, you know, concerned and sort of, you know, listen, like, most businesses, they just don't work.
Right.
So, like, whenever it fails, like, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've only just started and you think I've already failed.
Yeah.
You know, and that, like, it
hurts. It's not empowering.
It's not empowering. Or energizing. It actually hurts.
Yeah.
And I just kind of thought to myself, no, if this is how you see it, like, because they, I suppose they apply to themselves, where it's a case of, oh my God, if I did that, how would I cope?
Yeah.
And they're feeling the fear for
right,
you.
Right, right.
And that's why I say that they're not entitled
totally
to do that.
Who's a woman in tech who really inspires you? Who is someone that empowers you?
I actually don't know. I don't know that I particularly follow anybody. I mean, there's lots of people out there, and like, I've always been a little bit of a lone ranger in that I do my own thing, and I find my inspiration sort of either from within or specific things.
Right.
So I don't know that I actually follow anyone in particular, or, and this is also kind of, no, I don't even see it as a downfall. Like, you know, I don't know names. I don't know, oh, you know, that woman who works wherever, stuff like that. On my, like, when I was coming to the point of view of actually, I'm going to quit my job and start my own business. It was International Women's Day, and we had people come in and talk. And there was a lady back home. She's the head of PayPal in Ireland, Louise Phelan. Mm-hmm. And like, she was pretty, like, there was things that she said that, like, the penny really dropped for me.
Yeah.
You know, she started out as, she did nursing.
She wow, did, from nursing to PayPal.
Yeah, and she was hell-bent, told her, I really want to do nursing, I want to do it. And she did it, and then she finished her qualification, and she's like, oh, I really hate it. I don't want to do this. And they kind of said, okay, that's all right, but we're not going to pay for you to do anything else. Do you know what I mean? So
right.
If you want to do something else, like, you're on your own. You have to make that happen.
Yeah.
And she did. And she got a job in a local bookkeeper's, which she really loved. And I remember her saying, you know, she came in one day and her boss sort of threw the newspaper at her and said, you need to get yourself a different job. And she said, I absolutely, you know, kind of, it's like, oh my God, I've just been sacked.
Yeah.
And he sort of said, you are wasted here. You need to get up and get out and make something of yourself. And that's what she did. And
that's
she
incredible.
Is the head of PayPal. And she's amazing.
Say her name again.
Louise Phelan.
Cool. And we'll include her in the show notes too. Mm. What's next for you?
I suppose it's this sort of, okay, I'm in this space right now of, you know, I'm looking for investors. I'm looking for that team. And like I said, I wanted to launch from LA because it just makes sense. It's, you know, the mecca of the world for anything to do with health and fitness. So it's like I'm literally out there banging on doors and waiting for that right opportunity and that right person that I find. So, you know, I have a couple of meetings set up this week and just see what comes out of it.
Cool. Awesome. I hope that it works out really well.
It will.
And how can people stay in touch with you?
Email is great. It's actually kind of perfect for me. So heaslip.claire@gmail.com.
Can you spell it?
Yeah. HEAS for sugar, LIP for papa, .claire, CLAIRE @gmail.com.
Perfect. Claire, thank you so much for being on the Women in Tech show. Like, this has been awesome. I am so excited to give more exposure to European startup founders, engineers, investors. I just, like, I love Europe.
Yeah, it's great.
Perfect.
Hopefully we'll keep it together.
If you guys want to further connect with incredible people like Claire in the Women in Tech community globally, feel free to go to the Women in Tech Facebook group. You access it super easy by going to womenintechvip.com. That's womenintechvip.com. Or do be sure to connect with us on Twitter @womenintechshow. That's @womenintechshow. This is Esprit Devora, and I will talk to you guys, see you guys, hear you guys in the next episode. Bye. This episode of the Women in Tech Show is powered by UpGuard. UpGuard's discovery engine brings visibility to complex IT environments, enabling teams to quickly identify risk, confirm compliance, and make business safer. They are proud supporters and employers of incredible women in tech. To be notified every time a new Women in Tech episode is released, simply text Women in Tech to 310-872-2423. That's 310-872-2423. To support the Women in Tech show, it's super easy. All you need to do is start doing your Amazon shopping by clicking on this link first, womenintechshow.com/Amazon. That's womenintechshow.com/Amazon. The Women in Tech show is hosted by Esprit Devora, edited by MKW Films, show notes provided by Carl Marty, music by Jay Huffman Live. The Women in Tech Show is a WeAreTech.fm production.